Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Musician Liz Phair was almost unknown when she released her debut album in 1993, but that changed quickly. Exile in Guyville, a rebuttal of the Rolling Stones' Exile on Main Street, was a critical smash for its raw and honest lyrics and a lo-fi sound that blends alt-rock, punk, and pop sensibilities. Since then, Phair has released 5 more albums and has invariably been criticized that each one has not also been Exile in Guyville. Most recently, some believed she lost her edge, that recent albums strayed too far into pop. Her most recent album is edgy, but predictably, some are complaining it's too edgy. Phair left her record label in the process of making Fun Style and released the album Out of the Blue on her own last July 4th. It's true that it is out there. She does dabble in rap, but it also has some quintessential Liz Phair sound, like the song that led into this segment called Satisfied. Liz Phair plays Milwaukee's Turner Hall Ballroom tomorrow night. Before she hit the road, she joined us from her home in California. Liz Phair, welcome to Lake Effect.
Thanks for having me.
So a few of us were just talking about phoner interviews and saying how tough they are because you never know how things are going on the other end. There's no body language. You don't know if the person's finished doing the dishes or they're watching CNN. So how's it going there?
Well, I'm learning about Nubian warriors. I'm actually Googling like what their customs and rituals are. So, hey.
And should I ask why you're Googling Nubian warriors right now?
I was looking for inspiration. They look really, they're really impressive looking. So I was starting there. Like some of, do you know the deceased artist Leni Riefenstahl? She's controversial because she was involved with some of Hitler's propagandist films early on. But she went on to do all sorts of crazy stuff. She's got some amazing pictures of Africa. So, okay. Just a boring aside, but, you know, like, the more water wheels you have, the richer you are, apparently, in this society.
Well, it's going to be hard to transition into Fun Style from that, but we'll do our best.
I don't know. Maybe Fun Style, you know, it's like my water wheel. How many discs have I put out now? Six CDs, I think I'm up to?
Let me ask you kind of about how this latest water wheel came to be, then. Because I gather it had been sitting out there for something more than a year, and then, boom, you released it yourself, essentially, in less than a week.
Yeah, you know, there's so much hoopla that goes into putting records out, and I think a lot of artists always get frustrated about that because they want to get to their fans, they want to play what they have, and sometimes the marketing mechanisms are so complicated, there's so many people involved that you know, hinders that process of, like, I made music, I want my fans to hear it. And since we're in a climate right now where the record business is changing so dramatically and no one really knows what's going on, you can do crazy things like that. You can actually just have the idea, I want to get this music out, and someone actually can do that for you. And it's fun. It's different. I mean, there's no real answer right now, but I enjoyed it a lot.
I mean, I know a lot of writers who talk about the editorial process, and I mean, they say it's necessary, but by the time the book actually gets published and hits the shelves, they kind of hate it.
Right? They're so sick of it.
Is there a little of that in what goes into the traditional way of putting out a CD?
This record was lucky for me because I had been told early on that it was too shocking, it was too weird, you know, people couldn't handle that kind of sound coming from me. And so I had the luxury of, like, sitting on it for a year just myself, realizing that, you know, a year later I still loved it, and I didn't hate it, and I was, you know, excited to put it out. And, you know, but I think a lot of times when you get too many cooks in the kitchen, you know, I think that's what the novelists are talking about, is that, like, too many people had their hand in it until it doesn't even feel special or magical anymore. And I think that's a real sadness for a creator.
You know, you use the word controversial, not necessarily attached to yourself. Actually, we were back to talking about Nubian warriors before. But, but it seems like of the articles and reviews of Fun Style, like, half of them have the word controversial attached to them. And maybe this is an obvious point, but controversial just seems like such a weird word to attach to music. I mean, you can like something or dislike something, but unless you're in the music industry, why would it be controversial? I mean, does it strike you the same way?
I think I'm unfairly labeled as being provocative more than I actually intend to be, and I'm not sure why that label has stuck around so long. Possibly I'm more uninhibited in terms of what I will say or do. I'll try different things, and maybe that's part of it. But I think, you know, there's also that need to generate some kind of label. Like, if they can't put a label on you, they'll find one. And I think lately it's been easy to kind of say, like, oh, she put a record out, and there was no forewarning, and there wasn't a press machine setting it up, and we didn't know it was coming, and she's rapping on it. What is she doing rapping? And I think a lot of people miss the humor, which I knew my fans would get, but, you know, I think at first they're like, what is she doing rapping? She belongs in the indie artist category. Like, and if people sort of want the bureaucracy, they want something to come down the pipeline that they expect, and when, you know, something comes down that's unexpected, for me, that's a welcome surprise. Like, I think it's fun to get thrown a curveball and see if you can handle it. So,
and it's interesting because a lot of the same people who have criticized this CD are the ones that label you an iconoclast, and you would think that this would be perfectly in keeping with being an iconoclast.
Right? Aren't I doing my job?
Why do you think Bollywood seems to have touched such a nerve with so many people? I mean, this is the rap song.
Let me tell you how it's done here in the Hollywood. Maybe you was thinking you was in the Bollywood. If I want to break the rule, you know I probably could.
CBS is out of RESPCT.
I'd love to help you out, but we have what we call standards and practices.
In legal terms, we refer you to this as a recoupable interest in an artist's compositions on vinyl, plastic, digital, and all transmittable airwaves for a period of no less than 600 years in all territories of the earth. The solar system is an only unit voice.
You know, it seems like that the reviews that are most critical of this focus on that one song.
No, no. I mean, like, it's a fun thing to speculate about. Like, you know, why is that so hard to digest? And what scared me the most, what really frightened me and made me wonder if I could carry on a dialogue with the critics, you know, was the sense that a lot of people didn't get that it was funny, that it was tongue-in-cheek. They actually thought I might be embarking on a rap career. And that actually kind of made me speechless. I just sat there thinking, like, you thought I was serious, you know, because it's so over the top, and it's funny, and I'm doing different voices in it, and there's all these effects. I mean, there's, like, made of stone, you know, which my 14-year-old son thinks is, you know, the bomb. And so, you know, like, it really, when you realize that you're talking, have you ever talked to someone who's humorless, you know, and you realize that, like, there's no way that this, you can bridge the gap? That's sort of how I felt with some of the early, you know, critics.
You had been on the ATO label. That was the label Dave Matthews co-founded. And even though you are not with ATO anymore, Dave Matthews produced and played on a few of the tracks on this album. What did he bring to what you already do? And in the wake of leaving the label, are you still on good terms with him?
I'm on extremely good terms with him. I think he's one of the world's most lovely individuals. I'm so happy to know him and his wife and just the people they work with and the band. That whole operation, as far as I know in music, is one of the most inspiring collections of musicians. I can't tell you. There's good and bad people in every profession, and he's a real prince. It's a little bit of a misguiding label to say he was the producer, and, you know, we really got together. When musicians meet and they like each other, the urge is to record something together. You know, we do this socially. Like, on a Friday night, if I'm not doing anything and I know someone's in the studio, we'll all go hang out and record together. It's sort of a way, it's how artists party sometimes, you know. And we really immediately hit it off and wanted to make music together.
With our hearts in our hands, we should feel like the wave meets the sand. Well, you should know me better than that. I'm not supposed to try and move in.
I was basically piggybacking off his private recording sessions that he would do while he was on tour. So I'd fly around and meet him wherever he was and bring songs to him, and if he liked them, he'd play on them and sort of, you know, put his very special and I find very emotionally powerful touch on this stuff. It was fun. It was great.
So we both understand. Well, you should.
You know, the critics have, of course, predicted career suicide before, which has obviously been premature. Have you given any thought to what actually would be career suicide for you?
If someone cut off my hands, maybe? And even then, I'm not sure. Like, every once in a while, I'll have those disaster fantasies where I'm like, I could paint with a paintbrush in my teeth. You know, like, there's... I can't imagine not being creative. I can't imagine not having... It's as I've grown older, I've realized how essential it is to who I am. It's how I interact with the world. I take stimulus in, and I turn it into something, and I put it back out in the form of art, you know, and any variety of media. And, I mean, career suicide, I think, is for sissies. I think, like, if you're even talking about that kind of stuff, you're way too concerned with what people think about you. You know, you need to be at a higher altitude looking down on all this, thinking how lucky you are to be alive, to be in a society where you get to make art and that people actually want to hear it, and just grab it with both hands and hold on. You know, that's my plan.
You got to review Keith Richards' memoir for the New York Times. Can you talk about what that book did for you?
Boy, that really had a big impact on me, and I feel somewhat silly saying that because I'm not sure, you know, if people think I'm kidding or if that just makes me too impressionable. But I'd kind of forgotten what tribe I belonged to. You know, I think because of the controversy in my career, there's been a rift between me and my early indie fans that needed healing. And part of that, I think, really, I took a big step forward when I was at Matador Records, which was my first label, had a celebration of, like, their 20, 25 years. I can't remember if it was 20 or 25. In the business, and a lot of the old indie artists from the 90s came and performed, and I was one of them, and it was amazing to do that. And that Las Vegas weekend was when I was delivered the Keith book and started reading it to review for the New York Times. And it all kind of came together in my head as it's like, no, this is my tribe. These are my people. And I really got it in a different way than I had before, and I was incredibly proud. And, like, even as funny and... I mean, it's not like Keith is coming up with a cure for cancer, but he really is reminding us all not to take this all so seriously, to just understand what a true rock, what is the right word? What do you, like, I think I said it in my review, like, this should awaken a little bit of the rock star in you. We all have the rock star in us, and for God's sake, people, you know, wake it up, you know?
Well, and you know, you have this teenage son at home with you.
That helps.
Well, yeah. I mean, I wonder if, you know, you're able to project the journey that you've been through on him in some subtle ways that he doesn't necessarily get it as a lesson, but you're imparting the wisdom of the road on him in any way.
Yeah, because they're old enough that they are going to see through your bullshit, for one thing. But they're just about to engage with the real world, and you need to prepare them. So it's a fine art of being honest about yourself and your choices in your life, at the same time making sure he has the tools to take advantage of life and get the most out of it and reach his potential. So I'm always trying to be that sort of, you know, role model, that humble role model that can inspire him and say, like, yes, you can love your life, but it's going to be tough, and here's the deal. So I'm excited for him. You know, I'm excited for him to, and he's definitely rattling the cage.
But does it make you hypersensitive about, like, the contrast between the rock world and the real world, or where those two places meet up?
Well, I mean, the rock world has a lot of dangers, a lot of sirens calling from the rocks. You know, you have to try to make sure, I mean, he will, I'm sure, try drugs. I'm sure he will, you know, find himself on the wrong side of the law here and there, and you just kind of have to show what's great about about that joie de vivre, and at the same time, I mean, God, who, any parent is freaking out during the teenage years. You just don't know where it's going to go. You do, you know, prepare them the best you can.
Do you have thoughts about your own memoir? I mean, we were talking about Keith Richards. Is there a Liz Phair memoir that's maybe out there?
There might be. I mean, it's far away, but there might be. When I was jogging down by the beach yesterday, it was like night, and I was remembering different parts of my career that I thought were really big moments, you know, big moments for not the obvious reasons. They weren't all the most high-profile things I've done, but they were just the most encompassing and impactful for me. And, you know, they shine the brightest. And I think I would like to write down some of those before I leave the planet.
Well, you've been so generous with your time, and we're looking forward to seeing you in Milwaukee in a week and a half.
Cool. I'm looking forward to coming home and playing in the Midwest again. You know, it's fun for me.
Well, Liz Phair, thank you so much, and safe travels.
Thank you.
Liz Phair's newest album is called Fun Style. Phair plays tomorrow at Turner Hall Ballroom. She spoke with us from her home in California. We'll leave you with a vintage Liz Phair song from her 1998 CD, White Chocolate Space Egg, a track called Polyester Bride.
You're lucky to be drinking here for free.
Mitch Tyke, thanks so much for tuning in today, and I hope you can be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from WUWM and WUWM HD1, Milwaukee Public Radio. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next.